Before we begin, Simon and I would like to acknowledge that we're recording this podcast from our homes on the unceded land of the Kulin people. We'd also like to acknowledge that we met and grew up together on the unceded land of the Combomary people of the Yugambeh language group, and we'd like to acknowledge and pay our respects to First Nations elders past and present.
Always was, always will be Aboriginal land. Welcome back to Broadly Relevant.
I'm Ryan Hamilton.
And I'm Simran Pasricha.
And this is the podcast for burnt out divas.
Trying to stay broadly relevant.
What's been your hyperfixation this week, Simran?
Ooh. Actually getting one labubu. I know that's kind of like so...
You got one?
No, but like the hyperfixation of getting just one labubu. Because the thing is, I'm not a trinket girly, but if I were to get one trinket, I think it would be a labubu.
I don't know. I think they're so useless. Like, you can't do anything with them.
Go on. What was your hyperfixation of the week?
The Indian grocer down the road. I've gone like four times. I bought a clay tava. I've been cooking my parathas.
My favorite part is your housemate texting me saying, your co-host just said, I'm so glad I discovered India. That's right.
Broadly
culture. We've been apart for a while, so this has been wild. But yeah. I like the remix. Lots happening in culture this week. Have you seen the Materialist, Brian?
Honestly, when it came out, I just thought it was an NGV exhibition because it was like that font that they always use. Totally. And because the French Impressionists are on. So I was like, oh, it's just an art exhibition.
Sure. It is, in fact, not that. And both of us have not watched it, but I think that equips us to talk about it, surely. If you don't know, it is a movie by Celine Song. She's also the genius behind Past Lives. Have you watched that?
No, but in 2020, she did a adaptation of The Seagull, which is a classic play by Chekhov, in The Sims 4 on Twitch.
That is so many things. What can't you do?
Won some awards. So I know her through that work.
Totally. And this is, I kind of love that for her. she is the creative mind behind Materialist and director, and she wrote it all. And it stars Dakota Johnson, Pedro Pascal, and oh my God, what's that white man's name? Wow.
Tom Holland?
No. No, the other white man. Who cares? It's Chris Evans. All right, so.
Oh.
That's who it was. Captain America. I don't know. After the movie came out, everyone was calling it broke man propaganda because, spoiler alert, she ends up with the broker man out of the love triangle. Pedro Pascal plays the rich man. Chris Evans plays the poor man out of the two.
That's a bad deal.
Yeah, totally. Okay, so most people were kind of like surprised by this movie in general. It was funny. My parents watched it whilst I was getting a colonoscopy. And they were like, let's just go watch a movie while we wait for her. And they hated the movie. And then my girlfriend was like, actually, I loved this movie so much. So then that was like a real issue for me because I had to, church and state. The author of the newsletter Cherry Pick, Sarah Lee, kind of talks about, still not over it, is Materialist poor men propaganda, and kind of like looks into it further. She says yes, because the poor man won the girl in the end. But, you know, she kind of like goes into more openly that he's like willing to look for like more work once like they're together, and that it wasn't like, you know, enough with the guy who was like richer, and that love is enough in the way, even though that's like not necessarily what it is in real life. And then Celine Song was recently asked a question by Refinery29 about what she thinks about this narrative of broke man propaganda and the Materialists. And she was not impressed at all by this line of thinking, which I found really interesting and kind of confronting in a way. She says, thanks for asking me that. I think it doesn't make me laugh because it really is disappointing for me that there is a very real confusion about feminism and the history of feminism. I think that because through intersectionality, so much of feminism has been anti-corporate and anti-capitalist. And of course, it was always in the forefront of fighting classism. So I'm very concerned about the way that we talk about people who are poor. She goes on to say, and I think the thing that's very important to to me is to stress that poverty is not the fault of the poor. I think that given that it's very brutal and quite cruel to talk about John, the character played by Chris Evans, who loves Lucy, who is a beautiful character played beautifully by Chris, and to talk about him in such cool terms, like broke boy and broke man. So she kind of like points to like this classist kind of gaze that we put upon everything. And I'm in two minds about this. And I found that there was another person on TikTok who kind of understood, and her username is @cat, but I'll put the video down below. She says, if she didn't want people to think that this film was broke boy propaganda, maybe she shouldn't have positioned the female's character's material financial desires as nothing but shallow. The same way incels and podcast bros do. Maybe she should have she could have depicted some actual growth and maturity in the main male love interest instead of having him deliver vague platitudes about trying to make more money at the end of the film. Maybe she could have said something more, said something other than love conquers all, so forget all your non-negotiables when building a life with someone, like all the other rom-coms and dramas do.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think about broke boy propaganda?
Yeah, broke boy propaganda. I don't really have any thoughts about it, but you know, I don't know. Is it bad to want to marry rich, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I think also in the way that she kind of comes at the question in sort of saying that like the history of feminism is intersectional in that way, I think that's why I have the issue with the broke man propaganda. She's kind of saying like we view everything through this like classist viewpoint and we shouldn't be doing that. But then she initially says that feminism is intersectional and is like anti-classist, anti-capitalist. But that is the framework that we exist in. And therefore, like, I think it's like the most feminist thing to like go for someone that is richer in that situation. Is that bad for me to say? I don't know if I'm
I don't know if it's the most feminist thing, but like, no. I don't know. I think it's probably the most logical thing given the nature of patriarchy and systems of labor. Like, of course you want to not to be protected from that, but it's like I actually don't even know if I agree with the question of is it broke by propaganda. Like, surely we should all be able to love who we want and burn down the system that forces us to be broke in the first place.
Well, I think that's what she's trying to say, like that it shouldn't be put on the fault of the broke guy, like on the character's fault, because you know, poverty isn't the poor's fault. You know?
Yeah, well, it's a policy decision.
Yes, and everything is. But I think given the framework that we exist in, I don't know, I feel like...
I saw an interesting play adaptation of Pride and Prejudice the other day. So there's like these two characters, Elizabeth and Mr. Darcy, and then at the end of this play, which like, basically she's like poor. Well... Mm-hmm. Middle class, but like not well off. And so she essentially marries this like super fucking rich man. And the family is all like, oh my God, finally, like, wow, we're going to escape poverty. This is so great. But then in this adaptation, that still happened. But then there was this really fascinating moment right at the end where they both turned to face the audience and they were like, what about them? And I was like, oh my God, we're in the show. And then the dialogue was like, oh, well, you know, they need this story so they can believe things can get better. And I was, or something along those lines. And I was like, that's so interesting. Because I guess under capitalism, like there's a utility to stories that like give you that escapism of feeling like you can just like marry your way out of it. So maybe actually it's the most interesting thing for Song to say that this story, she actually marries the poor one and she does choose love, and everything else will be hard, but, you know, you can have love. But then also, you know, love as like this like separate, you know, pure thing, which just happens, is like a relatively new concept, you know, like the way that marriage is, you know, like dowries and stuff. Yeah. It's like historically marriage and romance has been so tied up in sort of like capitalism. And so it's like, you know, who's the liberal propagandist? Hard to say.
So true. That is so true. I also think the added context of like the fact that the main character is played by Dakota Johnson, who is a Nepo baby. And like this was like, you know, a really big budget movie. I love Celine Song's work, but I think sometimes I find it hard to like separate the reality of this like capitalistic, you know, machine that we are all in, and then trying to say something that's like opposite of that. Like how to balance that, I guess. And
well, the beauty of capitalism is as a system of oppression is that it can subsume critique of itself into itself, you know?
Shut the fuck up.
In just other news.
All of our listeners. It's so true.
In other news, have you, you know, the Melbourne Star, the giant Ferris wheel in the Docklands?
Speaking of capitalism, yeah.
It closed down 4 years ago because it wasn't profitable. But after an 11 million takeover of the company that owns it, it's coming back next year, baby.
Interesting.
And I think that's one of the big cultural, like, touch points that we really need to hold on to this week.
If the PR people for this Ferris wheel, is that what it is? Sorry.
it's called the Melbourne Star.
Oh, yeah. For the Melbourne Star. The PR people for the Melbourne Star.
We have an audience of over, you know, 7,000 on the socials.
Totally. And over 30 of the listeners. We'd love to come to the opening.
We'll cover it. We will, frankly, do a whole special just in the Melbourne Star.
Absolutely. We will.
Three cultural reasons you should visit.
Yeah, totally. It's
three geopolitical reasons you need to visit the Melbourne Star.
Yeah. No, that's great. I think we should do one culture, one one political, and one, like, really deep and meaningful reason to visit the Star.
Record a podcast in one of the capsules.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we have to finish it by the time we get around.
The opportunity is available to you, people at the
We're available at hey@broadlyrelevant.com. We look forward to speaking to you.
Totally.
What else is happening in culture, Simran?
I don't know if you've heard of the Tiffin lady.
I've seen her pop up on my TikTok, but I haven't, like, you know, sat with her content.
Yeah, Ryan said, is she even that famous? And I said, shut your freaking mouth. This is what I need. So if you don't know who the Tiffin lady is on TikTok, what the heck are you doing? Your For You page sounds terrible. Yeah, that's right. Looking at you, Ryan.
It's all Chinese construction buildings.
I learned all about how the
DJI headquarters got built. So
I don't know how to respond to that. But the Tiffin lady is also known as Lily Baria. That's her name. She is a UK baddie who's, like, also Indian, but she lives in Goa, India. And she basically just shows what she gets in her Tiffin every single day. The Tiffin service in India is just these people that will cook you, like, home-cooked meals, and it's like a stackable lunchbox, essentially. And she gets one every single day, and it's different food all day. And she just shows us what's in it. And I think it's kind of, like, incredible. I love this woman. Like, her videos have, like, millions and millions of views. And the tea is, I have known about Lily Baria for years. I knew about Lily. Lily was, like, on my Tumblr. I've, like, had all of her Instagram posts, like, saved. Like, I think she's, like, one of the first people that I kind of, like, discovered on Instagram. Like, she has been, like, my, like, Lily, I freaking love you. I don't think you get it. Like, she gives me, like, very similar energy to Charlie XCX. But she used to, like, do these, like, beautiful photo shoots in the most gorgeous langas. And she's really been popping off on TikTok, which is, like, so exciting to see. Also because a lot of the comments I see are very much like, oh my God, like, from people all over the world being really excited about something that's coming out of India. And I think at a time where there's so much Indian hate specifically and South Asian hate specifically, it's really exciting. And also on a personal level, like, at school, when I used to take, like, for a full week, I took a Tiffin to school, and that was, like, the last time I did that. Because I used to get made fun of the food that I brought and, like, the smells, and, like, not, funnily enough, like, not so much from the students, but, like, mostly from the teachers who were upset about the smells in my bag, which was, like, kind of insane, actually. But I really like Lily. Go on.
Me too.
Now you do, do you?
I didn't realize you discovered her. You know, I didn't realize that.
The thing is, I literally discovered her. Who was Lily Baria before Simran Pastricha, you know? Anyways, I'm going to speak a little bit more about her in our deep dive, which it's a broadly diva. I don't know why. I never know why I like, I'm like, oh, sneak peek of what's to come when we put it
Can't spoil it.
Can't spoil it, but it's also in the title. Like,
yeah.
But no, I am so proud of her and I freaking love her. Speaking of Indian food, you've been eating some.
Yeah, I've been cooking a lot of chana masala, which is stunning. I've literally got chickpeas soaking on the stove right now.
Wow, you're so on. I don't even soak my chickpeas.
Well, because I started reading all the recipes, and then they were all like, you know, for you've got to soak your chickpeas, and I was like, well, gotta soak your chickpeas. So I had Punjabi samosas for lunch today. Had some naan, had some gorgeous veggie parathas last night.
You're on. Oh my God. I went to the best South Indian restaurant like ever in like Warburton, which is like this rural town in Victoria.
Oh my God.
Great times. Sorry. Nobody needs to know any of this. Let's move on to news, shall we?
Broadly news. Well, I have something light.
Let's start with that, shall we?
Okay. Yeah, totally.
It's not that light.
No, but it's light compared to where we're going. Mm-hmm. So there was a millions of years old meteorite, like a rock from Mars, mm-hmm. like a meteorite from Mars that was found in Niger, right? That's your cold open for the story. Recently, that was sold for $4.3 million at Sotheby's in New York, which is like the big auction house. If you want to know pounds, it's 3.2 million Great British pounds here. But it is unclear if any of that money went to Niger. So basically, there's a bit of a black market, like, I was about to say a black market, but the term is a black market for meteorite sales, which is similar to like the way that like things in the art market get like smuggled and like turned around. And mm-hmm. so basically no one can trace the provenance of this meteorite, which like was discovered in Niger and then sold in New York, but no one can figure out how it got there. And so then the country of Niger put out a statement saying that they expressed doubts about the legality of its export, raising concerns about possible illicit international trafficking. Which is pretty drama, pretty tea. Sotheby's came back and said that, as with everything we sell, all relevant documentation was in order at each stage of its journey in accordance with best practice and the requirements of the countries involved. And it seems that Niger doesn't have many laws specifically about meteorites and how to deal with meteorites, but it's a little dodge and it does not pass the pub test that... 4.3 million dollars didn't go to Niger for the sale of a meteorite found there. So
interesting.
That's what's the light news now? It's just a bunch of like people just talking.
Interesting. A classic.
Yeah, because it was sold, and it's that thing with like stolen things where it's like they kind of get stolen and then they're stolen. So many things, like the fucking Elgin's marbles in the British Museum, mm-hmm. everything in the British Museum, really. It's just like things get stolen and we should return everything.
Period.
That's my really nuanced take there.
Yeah, speaking of returning things.
Are you going to do this the way I think you're going to do?
Yeah, we're talking about Palestine, the state of Palestine.
Right to return, baby.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm sure most people would have heard by now, but Australia will move to recognize the state of Palestine at the United Nations General Assembly next month, which I think is a really big step. This has come with a condition that that Hamas play no role in its future governance. So Anthony Albanese said, Australia will recognize the state of Palestine. They will recognize the right of the Palestinian people to a state of their own, predicated on the commitments Australia has received from the Palestinian Authority. A two-state solution is humanity's best hope to break the cycle of violence in the Middle East and to bring an effect end of the conflict, suffering, and starvation in Gaza. Fucking finally. I mean, sorry. Like, yeah, like, hurry up. But I'm glad he did it, I guess.
It's also fucked because it's like, well, a year ago you were expelling people from your own party for voting for this thing that you're now about. Yeah. And it's just like, it sucks that the government keeps, and just governments keep proving that no one's committed to doing the right thing on time.
Mm-hmm. Ahead of all of this, Benjamin Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel, told journalists that Australia and other nations were delusional for thinking that Palestinian recognition would bring peace. So he said at a press conference, he said, to have European countries and Australia march into that rabbit hole just like that, fall right into it, I think it's actually shameful, but it's not going to change our position. So I thought we'd like chat about like what this means, like recognizing like Palestinian statehood and what that actually changes. Because I think people are like kind of confused on what that means, especially when I was talking to some people at the protest last week, and they were like newer protesters, also younger. They were like, isn't Palestine a country? Like, isn't Palestine a state? Like, what, you know, what difference does it make if like a country sort of recognizes them? And a couple of things. So while most countries in the world have actually already recognized Palestinian statehood, these like upcoming recognitions kind of mark a really major shift, because it's the members of the, so France and Britain specifically, it's the first members of the G7 to do so. And I think that's an important thing, because they're like members of like the UN Security Council, and they have, and they're like permanent members. I think that's really important and quite huge.
Yeah. Yeah. Really big.
The ABC has a piece on like what this recognition would change in practice. And they kind of look at it from a perspective of also isolating the US and kind of leaving the US and Israel to be on their own, and kind of leaving Israel to be dependent on Trump as well, which I think is like an interesting take, because I think, agreed, like a lot of it is kind of symbolic, which is important in itself. I think those things of like actually saying like recognizing Palestinian statehood is incredibly important, and saying that and kind of like saying that you think that these people matter is important. But I think the concept of like leaving like the US and Israel on its own is also quite significant, especially in this day and age, especially with Trump like at the helm of everything. Yeah.
Yeah. It's also been a really fraught time in Gaza as well, because there were 5 Al Jazeera journalists killed because of an Israeli strike, a targeted Israeli strike on a tent housing these journalists in Gaza City. And the people who passed included Mohammed Karek, Ibrahim Zahir, Mohammed Nafal, and Mohammed Aliwa, and Anas al-Sharif. And it's just like, it's really fucked. I don't have anything to say, because it's just like, it just keeps happening and it keeps being fucked. And it's like, Al Jazeera is one of the last, one of the few like media organizations that is actually covering the genocide, like in a fair and unbiased way.
Yeah.
And also like, with like really good on the ground coverage, you know, despite the fact that they've been banned from Israel because of their coverage of the genocide.
Yeah, their on the ground coverage has been incredible, especially because, again, so many journalists are dying there, and also are like quite weak to write and to put out information in general. And I think Al Jazeera has done a really good job at navigating and supporting the journalists that are in Gaza doing the work. So this is quite horrific. But I hope that as more countries recognize statehood of Palestine, we'll get somewhere. I don't know. That's kind of where I'm at.
I mean, I'm so glad that the international community is coming to the point where they're like, let's do something. But I'm also like, I don't know if a two-state solution is the answer, because, you know, the one state should be Palestine, because Palestine was already a place that had like a diverse group of people before then, until a literal colonial invasion, you know? And it's like, and like, what's the point of a two-state solution, you know, if you still have so much propaganda and so many like literal colonists going in to territory that is not Israeli, like under no one recognizes Israeli territory, and killing people, you know, and setting up houses, like, you know, it's like, what's the point of a two-state solution when there's still like, I don't know. Do you know what I'm saying?
No, absolutely. I completely understand. Like, I don't think like a two-state solution is like realistic with the...
No, it's not the long-term solution
that you have like in play, you know? Okay, moving on. Okay, so the other night, it was my, both of my housemates, they had like a birthday thing, and we all went out to like a gig, and like we were partying, whatever. We got home around like, I want to say like 1:30. And as you do, after a night out, you order, you know, food, like from wherever. I was ordering mine from Mary Brown in the city, in Melbourne City. And my Mary Brown usually takes 20 minutes to get to my house, 30 sometimes. It took like an hour and I was really upset at my Uber delivery driver. I was like, where are you? Where are you? The reason that he was late was because there was a Nazi march happening in the city. That's why he was late.
That's, I didn't realize you were personally affected.
No. I wasn't, but I felt like such an idiot for friggin' saying anything to this man. Anyways, I've been extra nice to all my Uber drivers. Sorry, that was an insane segue, but I think, I don't know, that's how I wanted to go in with it.
Yeah, do you want me to talk about it?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so there was, as someone said, a rally of about 100 people from the National Socialist Network, which exists and is a thing that exists, and I hate that, who marched through Bourke Street Mall at 12:40 a.m. on a Saturday, dressed in black and wearing face masks. And like, because it popped up on my TikTok, and I was like, it's... Every time the Nazis walk, there's like more of them, and I don't like that. That does not fill me with a sense of safety or security. I really don't like the Nazis growing in numbers every time I see them.
I think it's a fair feeling.
The march came ahead of the network's national conference in regional Victoria, which was this past weekend, where a journalist and photographer were allegedly attacked by members during a gathering before the main event. And it's just like... I hate this. And I also, it's, and I understand, okay, well, there's a lot of nuance around this issue, which is like, should we even be talking about it? Because they're doing it to like attract press coverage. That's why they keep doing it. Mm-hmm. But then there's also like the double thing of like, they only do it at midnight when there's no one around and they all cover their faces because they know that actually nobody fucking likes Nazis. Mm. And it's just a really complex time. Not complex. I mean, it's simple, like fuck Nazis, but it's complex in the sense that why do the Nazis exist? You know?
Well, yes. And also I think you're so right in terms of like how we cover white supremacy. It is an issue that I have also been not struggling with, but it's definitely come up a lot in the coverage of white supremacy as a journalist, how much attention you give to these groups. This group in particular is very interesting because they also want to start a political, party, and they have I don't know if you've heard about like definitely like signs that they've hung from like bridges and like Northland Shopping Center. Like these are the people who are this is the group that keeps doing that, where they like show horrific signs, and a lot of the criticism around like media not showing a lot of coverage, it's like, why aren't you showing this, why aren't you showing this? Like, again, it's more like, what do we give them attention or not? I do appreciate like content creators like Jeff Kasubi and Hannah Ferguson for, you know, putting that in front of people and like talking about it on their platforms. And yeah, it's a very nuanced situation. And I have been thinking about it because on August 31st, there is this another march that is being planned. No one has taken credit for it yet, but it's called the March for Australia. A lot of the rhetoric online is that this is a very vague kind of mission statement for this march. And some people who like on like social media posts, they're like, oh my God, like March for Australia. Oh, excited, like going. Especially because it's like so soon after the Gaza marches, like some of the comments are like, oh, is this like part of like that kind of movement? And it absolutely is not. And it's all over Australia because some of the other comments are like, I come from an immigrant family. I'll definitely be there. My family moved here for Australia, not for it to get taken over by the third world. A lot of people have kind of slammed the idea, calling it racism at its peak. So it's quite scary. One video there was promoted the marches promoting the marches had footage of the 2005 Cronulla riots.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, so it's a very scary thing. So if you're a migrant, maybe stay safe on August 31st. But I think the point I'm trying to make is that I think there was a lack of coverage on this situation in general. And I feel like there is a duty of care for people to like be able to like keep safe.
Know about, you know, yeah.
To know
yeah.
about it so that they can make like an informed decision on what they would like to do on that day, especially being migrants. Like I won't be going to the city on that day, you know?
Yeah.
Any thoughts, Ryan?
I mean, like, I know fascist rhetoric is stupid, but it is fucking stupid. I'm just looking through their points. Who are we as a nation when 1 in 3 people were born overseas? Okay, I go to the ABS. Estimated resident population by country of birth. Guess what's number one?
Britain, isn't it?
England. Of course it's England. Yeah.
Of course it is.
Of course it is, you know? And it's like, I don't know, you can't be proud of your convict heritage and then complain that people were born overseas. Like, what? Like, be consistent, you know? Yeah. It, arguably, yeah. I don't think anyone should have come here, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Send everyone home.
Send everyone back, yeah.
You can't pick and choose. You can't pick and choose.
Yeah.
It's fucked up.
Quite fucked up. So, yeah, I'm sure we'll say more on that later. But stay safe, everyone out there.
Broadly Diva. If you are a new listener, occasionally Simon and I do a little bit where we pick a diva that we like, and a diva, you know, anything can be a diva, and then we both pitch our diva to the other person, and then we when we remember, post on Instagram a little poll so people can vote for their favorite diva, and then we have a winning diva. Past participants have been hair clips, Greta Thunberg, the founder of Canva, you know, so. Really, anyone can be a diva. Simran, do you want to introduce your diva for the week?
Yes, I actually have already spoken about her, but she is, again, the one and the only Tiffin lady, Lily Barrier. Love my life. again, obsessed with her, obviously, you know, showing her content. Also, I enjoy the fact that it's such a light touch content for her. You know, she literally just like has lunch and she gets to do that.
Show and tell,
I think that's pretty badass. I think show and tell is quite fun and whimsical. And I think that we should bring back more of that. I feel like that's like my most exciting thing to do at a workplace is show what I brought in as my lunch. And I think that's like, you know, people are excited to do that. We talked about the Tiffin lady and now we all do what's in our lunch boxes, like around work. Yeah. So the cultural moment that she is driving.
Is Pedestrian posting that content or?
No, it's just us in our office on the couch. but it's very cute. And I also think in general, her content kind of focuses on showing parts of India that the media doesn't really like showing. I feel like, you know, I still have conversations with people about like, oh my God, like, is it like safe to go to India? Like, is it clean to go to India? Like, I know that I'll just get sick in India. Like, these are conversations that I have quite regularly when people haven't been there before. Even like they see like Indians or like South Asian people who haven't been to the country before. And I think like coming to Australia and even sometimes in Malaysia, having that conversation with people was very interesting because that just wasn't my experience. And I know that I definitely come from a place of privilege, especially like in my experiences in India and my family in India. But I think focusing completely on the downsides of living in a country and like the, you know...
Well, Australia has a lot of downsides. You know, Australia's got a march for Australia, so...
Yeah, no, exactly. And like, why don't we...
A lot of reasons to not come here.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, like focusing on the downside is quite harmful... for, you know, Indians everywhere.
Yeah.
And so Lily did an article with the Daily Mail, randomly enough. I was like, well, come on. but hey, maybe.
When you pitched this, you were like, oh, yeah, I'll just talk about the content creator that I'm going to talk about. And I was like, oh, that's fine. I didn't realize you came researched.
I came prepared. That's right. I'm here because you always win and I'm here. So she talks about on her content, she says, she like says this a lot. She says, God forbid a girl live in India and enjoy it, especially like with the content that she posts about like going out to like restaurants and pubs and like cafes and just like normal living. I feel like people kind of exoticize India a lot of the time, but it's just, you know, people that live there, you know? And a lot of comments say, you know, like, it's only because so many people don't understand what it's actually like. They only think that they do. Goa is one of the most beautiful places ever. The views, the architecture of the houses, the fresh seafood. I would gladly retire in Goa. And everyone's like, oh my God, you're living literally like my dream life. And she is living my dream life. Like, not a joke. Again, obsessed with you, Lily Maria. I think, yeah, she's just doing really great work for South Asian desis, again, during a time of really big Indian hate, and also during a time where everybody seems to be wanting to take credit from South Asians. Like, this is one moment for an actual South Asian baddie, you know, going back to her roots. Like, she literally went to the colonizers' land. She was born there, sorry, in England. Sorry, she didn't go. And then went back to Goa because she was like, yeah, that's where I want to be in, like, at 20 years old. And she's like embracing it. And I think that's really cool. And I love that what she's doing for the culture and spreading, you know, just also whimsy. And I enjoy that. And I love her. And that's my tea. And I must win. Okay, your turn.
So my diva of the week is the Melbourne Star Observation Wheel, who, you know, I think in a similar way to your diva, also sort of exposes a light on parts of our city that the media isn't covering, notably Docklands.
Yeah.
So when you spend, you know, upwards of $30 to ride the wheel, you know, you get to really sit with a part of our city which has been undervalued. And I think that's really nice, you know, like to sort of showcase alternative perspectives about being in Melbourne, like the perspective of being in the air.
And the different lady doesn't do that, and you're so fair for that.
No, exactly.
Yeah, and no one talks about that. Yeah.
And I also think, you know, the sort of story that we're now seeing from the Melbourne Star when it was built, you know, a decade and a bit ago, you know, and then it shut down because it wasn't profitable. But it's like how beautiful it is to see that, you know, luckily capitalism can find a way, you know, and she's coming back. And I think that's the spirit of resilience that the Melbourne Star embodies is really inspirational to all of us in Melbourne, you know. In a sense, you know, the Melbourne Star went into a lockdown just like us and never came out. And now that finally the star is to start turning next year, I think this might be the beginning of Melbourne's return to one of the richest cities in the world, perhaps not financially, but certainly spiritually and culturally, because I know for one that my heart is nourished seeing a big rotating star on the skybus to the airport.
Wow, that's beautiful. Not beautiful enough to win, though, let me tell you. Anyways, I will remember this time to put the poll on Instagram.
You're like, now that I know I'm going to win.
Yeah, because I know I'm going to win. That's why I'm going to put the poll up, sir.
Yeah, of course.
please go to our Instagram at Broadly Velvet to go vote for your favorite Broadly diva. And we'll have the competition keep going. Should we check out?
Let's check out.
So, Ryan, what's something that you want to plug? I think we should plug more in this podcast. What do you want to plug?
Yeah, I run my own personal newsletter at ryanhamilton.work. And you can have a read where I talk about the theater I see in Melbourne and also what it's like as me being an artist and also all the interesting articles that I read.
I want to plug. I'm having a comedy show coming up on the 23rd of August at the Wyndham Cultural Center. And I think everybody should come.
I'm going.
Part of the Rad Woman comedy lineup, and I think it'll be fun. And yeah, you should come. So we'll put that in the link in bio too.
Bringing three friends.
Whoa. Okay, well, Ilya Hole Millie, thanks so much for listening, everyone. And literally obsessed with y'all. Please like, subscribe, go to our Instagram, go vote in that poll, please. Okay, bye.